Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good afternoon, sir. I am doing well. A little sleepy. The Chinese absolutely hit the spot, but I think there's something in it that makes me sleepy in the afternoon. Does it affect you that way?
Yeah, so it's like an Ambien for me.
So a shout out to Canton Cooks too, and the Shrimp Foo Young Sans Gravy. I don't like the gravy on
it,
but that's good stuff. Egg drop soup. I got to learn how to cook that stuff, the egg drop soup.
You haven't cracked the code of that recipe yet?
I have not. And then you get that big noodle thing with the dumplings. I'm not brave enough. I have my two things, my General Cho. Am I saying that right? Chow?
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know. It starts with a T, but you always use like a CH. I have that menu item, and then I have the Shrimp for Young, so I haven't ventured out beyond that.
Well, we got a great show today. We got an old friend from, where did we see him? Where did we meet him?
We saw him out there, and we were our good friends at the TAG, Technology Association of Georgia, had us at their big innovation summit, didn't
they? Right, the most innovative companies in Georgia or something?
Yeah, and the advanced press on this guy is that he knows a thing or two about innovation. Please welcome to the show and back to the Business Radio X microphone, Dr. Keith Herndon. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks a lot, Stone and Lee. I really appreciate you guys having me on. I'm going to have to stop coming on after lunch, though. The last time I
was
on,
you were... Again?
Yeah, it was lunch.
Man.
And I,
again?
It's the second food review I've had to sit through.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
So the name of your outfit is Internet Decisions, LLC. What are you guys out there doing for folks?
Well, we're a strategic research consulting company, and we help companies with all types of information needs, ranging from... research that supports product development, that supports strategic planning, anything that's an information need that goes beyond what you can just purchase off the street.
So there's some research you can buy off the street?
Oh, absolutely. There's all kinds of research companies and research reports, but we work with companies when they need something very specific, and it primarily involves interviewing their customers, are interviewing potentially their competitors, or interviewing people that they might want to be their customers but are not their customers yet.
Do you hear this voice? I mean, are you not jealous? I mean, the guy has got a radio voice. So when you get ready to help a company, you help them frame up the kinds of questions that will yield the kind of answers they need to make informed decisions, and then you have a whole team of people that you put on the phones or have going out in person, or?
Well, we partner with different companies. One of my partner companies that I work with here in the Atlanta area, CSM Research up in Marietta, they maintain a call center. So if we need to do that type of research, we would partner with CSM to use their call center. A lot of the research that I do is one-on-one executive level interviewing, and I'm an old business reporter turned technology guy, and so I put my old reporter hat back on and go out and interview executives. And we also do a lot of research at trade shows. People are primed to talk when they're at a trade show, so we can be retained by a client to get some industry lowdown and find a relevant trade show, and I can, within a couple of days, pretty much give a very good quality report about what's going on in a particular industry by just researching what's going on at a trade show.
Now, can you walk us through what one of your interviews looks like with an executive? Pretend Stone's an executive.
and pretend Lee knows how to do an interview.
Well, it would completely depend on the topic that we're trying to talk about. But if you're looking, say, for example, if you're a technology company or you're trying to reach a particular, I don't know, chief information officer with a new managed security service offering. So, you need to understand what are going to be the hot buttons that would move a CIO or a chief information security officer to buy that service. So we might go in and sit down and talk to them about what are their pain points, not specifically around any particular client product, but to try to understand what they would be looking for. So we would be asking them about what is important to them in these type products, and we would go through a predetermined list of things that we want them to comment on. And you talk to enough people, then you start finding the commonality of those, and then we put those common answers in buckets, and then that's what starts moving product decisions at our client.
Now, are these folks hard to get in front of?
It just depends. Sometimes they are, and sometimes they're not. I had a wonderful experience a few clients ago. We were working on, believe it or not, some high-tech packaging. And one of the people that they wanted to reach was a VP of packaging decisions at Walmart, and one of the VPs. So we just found some phone numbers by searching the web, and lo and behold, we called them, and the guy answered his phone one morning at 7:30 before anybody came in, and he wasn't being screened, and had a nice 45-minute conversation with the gentleman, and it was an excellent thing. So sometimes it works out that way. Sometimes, you know, I think you see sometimes, you know, all results are not common, you know. So
why would someone sit down and give you that much time and share that much kind of intimate detail about their business with you?
Well, I think sometimes people are very proud of what they do and they want to share their expertise and they want to help. There's also some people that feel an obligation to an industry segment. If they're working with a variety of vendors, they want the best products to be offered to them. So, you know, when you're talking about product development, that's really important. If you're looking at talking to someone's customers, they feel an obligation to help their vendor give them the better service. So they want to be that customer that provides the feedback. So it just depends on the perspective that you bring it. But you're always trying to find, when you're doing that kind of research, you're always trying to find that sweet spot that will get the person to talk to you. And being an old reporter certainly helps. I mean, you know, that you just have to be able to work with what that person's motivation is.
Now, there's a great deal of data available, information on virtually any topic. My 14-year-old can get on that thing on the internet and look up just about anything I ask her to look up, and she can do it better than I can. More and more, I mean, it's doubling every so often. There's just a ton of information. What insight, if any, can you offer us on just us regular old business folks, how to get on top of that and manage it to our advantage?
Yeah, one of the things that we do in addition to collecting primary data and stuff that we collect is that we help our clients just manage their, you know, the amount of business intelligence and the amount of information that is out there and helping them find the proper reports and stuff. But at a very holistic top level, we also are very involved in this whole concept of innovation from the perspective of an information explosion. And we do work with some clients, and this is one of the things that I talk a lot about, is the fact that our perspective is that innovation now is being driven by this information explosion. And as you said, at a big level, the amount of data that we produce and the amount of information that we produce as a society is doubling every couple of years.
Wow. I knew it had to be an incredible pace. It's just, I mean, it's overwhelming. I mean, do you find it overwhelming, Lee?
Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know. Do you think that there's actually more information being produced, or it's just that we now have access to more information?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I mean, one of the things that's one of these geek statistics that I like to throw out with people that I talk about is that this year the world is going to create and replicate 1.8 zettabytes of data.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I know. It's 10 to the 21st power of bytes. And at the same time, when you were talking about if we're going to create that much, there's so much stuff that's already been created.
Right.
We're going to consume some 10 exabytes of this stuff. So when you start looking at those numbers, it's just incredible. What we're talking about. We're getting to the point now where we've passed exabytes and zettabytes, and the scientists that track information explosion, they've now come up with the new phrase, a yottabyte. And that's
they're just
10...
making up words now, aren't they?
Yeah, right. Well, that's right. They, you know, there's people that come up with that, but we're at a yottabyte, and to my knowledge, the scientists haven't come up with the name for the next higher magnitude.
Well, my dad may have done it for you, because he referred to something the other day when he was talking to my kids, gigaboogies. He didn't know how many gigaboogies his computer had.
Yeah, well, there's probably a lot of gigaboogies in there, you know. But you know, put it in a little perspective, if you're talking about that 1.8 zettabytes, you know, just to think about it in terms of what that is and something that people might, you know, might relate to. Well, that would be the equivalent of 200 billion HD quality 2-hour movies. So if you tried to watch all those, it would take you 47 million years nonstop. So, you know, you can't even fathom what we're talking about in terms of that amount of data, you know, out there. So so what we try to do, and when we're talking about that, is just explain to clients and companies that we're awash in data, And we're at this point now where so many businesses are being affected by this explosion of data and this digital revolution of making it, as you said, you know, instantly available, and it's changing a lot of business models.
And so are some industries being more affected than others, and do some industries lend themselves to getting expertise on board from people like you more than others?
Well, I would say that, and this probably is a logical thing for most people to understand, is that probably the industry that has been most affected by this is what I would call the traditional media. And at the front of that is the traditional print media, newspapers and magazines. Newspapers more so, struggling mightily. We've seen just a tremendous deterioration in valuation of what newspapers are worth because their audience has kind of defected from their core product. And that's one of the industries that's been greatly affected. Traditional TV to some extent, because we're seeing people migrate to, you know, streaming video services. And I think that cable television, for example, is an industry that is very worried about their own delivery model if people stop needing them for the content and only need them for the pipe, you know, to get the content and then go to a Netflix or a Hulu
right.
or a YouTube.
We
for the
see
actual
it on
content.
Radio. More people that really want to hear this interview are going to hear it on this platform than they would if you'd been on regular conventional radio.
Absolutely.
They come because everyone that tunes in to listen to this is doing it on purpose, and they're finding it. It's not like it's washing over them. It's, you know, driving to baseball practice.
Absolutely. So, you know, so this is a prime example. So I would say that traditional media has been the first real significant casualty of this digital revolution, but it's expanding into other industries, and there are other places that are going to be affected by this as we go forward.
So how does a platform like a newspaper, how do they recover? Surely there's some way to take this and actually catch the wave and do something with it, yeah?
Really? Where's the horse and buggy people in the car industry?
Well, you know, I think that as a repository of a lot of community information, newspapers have a place in society, and we certainly don't want to lose the watchdog journalism that's been at the hallmark of you know, daily newspapers. But we do see that this decline is real and pronounced, and newspaper companies have to find ways at this point, I think, to distribute their products on tablets and other wireless devices. Apple had a wonderful commercial when they came out with one of their iPad versions where, you know, now you can watch your newspaper is one of the things that they use in you know, doing that. So it took the metaphor of, you know, reading a newspaper and turning it into more of a visual, you know, product. And I think that the magazines, newspapers, print of all kinds, they have to start looking at wireless devices as their next product format. And probably the only one that has the capability of saving their business.
Now, but isn't it also true that typically when a new industry kind of blossoms, it's rarely the people that were the old players in that industry, they tend to kind of fade away?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, does anybody remember Friendster, you know,
right.
in the social media space? Or you can even, you know, and then, you know, Friendster was displaced by MySpace, and then, well, you know, where's Friendster and MySpace? And, you know, they kind of gave way to Facebook. So yeah, but I think that still traditional content creators, if they can find a distribution model because they do have some infrastructure in place, they can be relevant in terms of being that collector of information, and also what we're finding is the need for someone to curate that information, somebody to be able to help them find it and make sense of it. And I think that that's something that in the initial wave of the online industry, and when we were talking about basically websites, the newspaper industry and the magazine industry, a certain large extent, missed that. But they have a chance to regain some of that lost time in this new wireless world that we're about to enter, or that we've already entered.
Now, you have a book coming out very soon, I understand, that addresses some of these topics, yes?
Yeah, well, the book itself is based on some of my doctoral research, and the book is called The Decline of the Daily Newspaper, How an American Institution Lost the Online Revolution. And it's somewhat of a media history case study looking at newspapers as an industry case study of how they really were pioneers in the 80s, And
the 1880s,
and the 1980s, and in the dawn of the online era, a lot of these companies were investing, you know, tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars in online products, online platforms. Knight Ridder, as a newspaper company, for example, is no longer in business. They had scientists that were developing what would be considered now a prototype of the tablet. So there was a tremendous amount of vision in the newspaper industry, and this book talks about how the industry had vision but failed in the execution of that vision.
So what industries are next in your view? So the newspapers, the media platforms, they're going to have to adapt or die off, but do you envision some other industries that are going to have to...
My bet's on education.
Well, I would say that education is definitely on the list, and I'm a prime example of someone that throughout his career has used, you know, new media techniques to further education. I did a hybrid program with the University of Oklahoma where I was limited time on campus, and part of it was external, degree programs. And then if you want to talk about external distance education, I mean, I live in Atlanta, but I did my doctoral work with the Curtin University of Technology in Perth, Australia. It's on the other side of the world
there,
and the exact opposite time zone, time spot. So, you know, so the U.S. model for education is under attack by a lot of ways. I definitely participate in the U.S. model. I teach part time currently up at Kennesaw State, and I will be a visiting professor at the University of Georgia during the next academic year. So I work and participate in traditional education, but I have personally benefited from a lot of new educational models, and I think there has to be more of a blend of that. And you're right that education is definitely going to have to change. There's very few industries that can withstand the price escalations that it's had over time.
Right, and with the technology, it's like you said with the distance learning. If you want to learn calculus, there's somebody that's the premier calculus teacher on the planet that we can get a video of them teaching calculus, and we can participate in an online education of calculus, and it becomes that person. I think it's the same with the media. People will buy Thomas Friedman. It's not, they're not buying Thomas Friedman because he's with the New York Times. They're buying Thomas Friedman because they like his perspective.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be the same with professors.
I think that to a certain extent, professors have that ability. But more so, I think it's the standards of a quality brand that, say, a Stanford or MIT,
right,
or Harvard, or even among the, you know, the state universities, University of Georgia, University of Florida, Georgia Tech, you know, those type of brands that represent quality education. Those types of aggregators, I think, will be relevant well into the future, but how they ultimately choose to deliver that product. I mean, I was just reading some stuff, you know, I'm a Georgia Bulldog. I'll have to throw that out there, but I'm very impressed with
Should I mute his mic?
No, but I have to throw out some things that I just read and was looking at where, the University of Florida is going to be, offering, beginning in this next academic year, an online Masters of Arts in Web Design, coming out of their journalism and mass communication program there. So they're beginning to offer more and more of this stuff. University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill has a really interesting program around media and technology that you can take pretty much online. You know, these are very quality brands that are doing a lot of things in this new form of delivery of education. So I think distance education.
Well, and they're taking it to another level. The Stanfords and MITs are offering these courses at no charge, where you don't get a college credit, but you're getting a certificate of completion.
Well,
and
then, yes.
At no charge. So now, if I'm a Joe employer and I have a guy that completed the Stanford thing and he has I check him out and he's a good quality person and he completed and he has that certificate of completion. What do I care if he has the degree or not, if he can do the work that I need him to do?
Well, I think that the incident that you're referring to was some experimentation that some professors have done at Stanford. And I don't believe that we can say that an experiment or something that a couple of professors are doing is going to actually expand out and be the way that this model is going to evolve over time. There's a tremendous amount of work and background and developing this. The Stanford people have taken that product outside of Stanford, and they're running it as a small business, their own company.
Right.
And that becomes almost a for-profit model. And there's a tremendous amount of for-profit education out there that we know, the University of Phoenix and Kaplan and a lot of the things out there. So what is the competition going to be in that type of a Stanford professor going out and starting something that would compete with an established, you know, for-profit brand,
right,
like a Phoenix? You mentioned that they were offering it for free. Yeah, at this point, but how long will that free model? I think we saw that going back to our newspaper and magazine model, the idea of free content didn't work for them.
Right.
You know, online. Eventually, somebody has to pay the bills.
Yeah, but are they going to pay? I mean, I think people are getting fed up of having their kids graduate from college and have six-figure debt, and they're working as a barista at Starbucks.
Well, yeah, I agree, and I think that's that's a part of the challenge that we have, both from the current state of the economy, and the types of degrees people choose to get with their, sometimes not necessarily married up with their personality type and their things. I think we have to work with students to say, okay, let's major in something that you're good at. Let's find the right school that will cater to your skills,
right,
and your ability to pay. And I think we have to do a better job of marrying, if you want to refer to a student as a customer, we have to do a better job of matching the customer with the service delivery. And it's been a common theme in industry for a long time, and we have to start applying that for education as well.
And I would think you could have every bit as much of a conversation around the changes we can expect down the pipe with healthcare. That's going to be huge, yeah?
Yeah, there are a lot of industries that this whole digital revolution is fueling different things. Healthcare, completely one that would be at the top of the list, because primarily of what's happening with this idea of electronic healthcare records and the ability of putting that information in a form that can be readily shared, between your doctors, between your insurance companies, between, potential medical researchers, a lot of different ways that your healthcare information can be used. And this idea of having electronic medical records, having you as the consumer control that information is a pretty powerful change in the way the healthcare industry works.
Now, your client base, how are you getting to them? Are you doing a bunch of market research and then going, how do you find your clients? Because you've got to deal with fairly senior level execs, right? How are you even getting on their radar?
To be honest, it's primarily word of mouth, and it's a lot of doing stuff like this, talking to different groups. I do a lot of public speaking. I work with the Technology Association of Georgia as one of my clients, and I'm also a volunteer and serve on the board of one of their societies. So as a result of that, I get in front of a tremendous amount of technology thought leaders, working with that group. So it's
strategy. That's why we want to hang out with you.
Exactly.
Somebody sees us hanging out with you, right? Hey, that Lee and Stone, they must be smart guys.
They must be smart too.
Hanging out with the doctor.
Well, it's a matter of, going out and finding where people are. I'm involved in, quite a few trade associations that work in this area, the Society of Competitive Intelligence Professionals.
Because this is not an impulse buy. I mean, you're going to trust your data collection, data dissemination, and decision-making in an organization of any size and complexity. I mean, you have to really earn their trust, I would think.
Right. Well, I believe that, they're looking for someone that has a track record of understanding the business and understanding what they do, and then having, an adherence to a code of ethics that we're not corporate spies. We're not going to violate any federal espionage, corporate espionage laws. We're going to do the data collection in an above board way. What we're helping them solve is some very complex problems with data that is empirical and not biased. I always tell, product development folks, the last people you want to talk to in your organization about a product coming out is the sales team. the sales team has an agenda, and they will have a bias around that. So, you don't necessarily also want to only speak to your best customers. You want to speak to some of the customers that might not like you very well. because you need a very good, complete picture of what your marketplace is in order to make very, what in many cases are very costly product development decisions.
And you certainly don't want to throw a summer intern at that conversation. You need somebody that's seasoned and can carry themselves well, because that's my image out there in the marketplace asking these questions.
Well, you know, I think that one of the things that has happened, like everything, you know, with certain internet type tools out there, people think that they can become an expert, you know, so there's some now, you know, very low cost survey type tools available.
So you don't use SurveyMonkey? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not saying anything negative against the actual tool itself, but you have to have somebody behind it driving it that understands what to do with the information when you get it, because you can't write questions that are leading questions. You can't write, you know, you have to make sure that you know that you're getting a statistically valid sample of your audience, or the data is going to be skewed.
So it's more complex than people may realize.
I would say that, you know, it's the old adage, you know, garbage in, garbage out. So you need to have someone that's, the tools itself are fine.
Right.
It's, you know, that there's nothing wrong with using that as a low cost tool, provided that you have someone with the expertise to know how to ask
the question. To craft the question in a way that you're going to get a meaningful response.
Right. And then to be able to analyze the data on the back end once you get the data back.
So say more about this book. Is Lee quoted in the book, or how far along are we?
The book was long in the bed before we met you guys. So, you know, maybe in the second edition, you know.
So where are we?
The book will be out this summer.
Uh-huh.
It's being released by Peter Lang Publishing. It's an academic publishing house, global. They do, you know, hundreds and hundreds of books aimed at the academic community. This book will be aimed at courses around media management and media history, and potentially to business schools that want a case study on, you know, innovation and what to do and what not to do. And the newspaper industry makes a very good case for vision is not enough. You have to have vision and marry that with execution in order to survive at the end of the day.
Now, is there any kind of common thread with all these industries having to kind of pivot in their marketing and their game plan with the advent of new technology? Is there any common thread of some mistakes that they all have made? Can you kind of lump it all together?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I think that the biggest mistake that people make is they misunderstand the importance of giving up control. In this data-rich world, people still want to control everything, and the internet and this free flow of information has made the consumer, even a business consumer or a consumer, much more powerful. And businesses that can work with consumers, work with their customer, and not have to control everything is in a much better position to succeed in the marketplace. Companies that want to hold on to that control to the nth degree and not empower their product user, I think they're pretty much doomed.
What a fantastic conversation. A lot of information. I don't think I can process it all, Lee.
Because it's zettabytes.
It's a zettabyte. Lots of gigaboogies in that conversation.
Well, we're almost at the yottabyte if we keep this going much longer.
Before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you if they want to have a conversation about this, or how they might get their hands on your book when it's coming.
The website that you can find me is www.internetdecisions.com. And when the book is released, hopefully in July of the summer, there'll be links to find it there. If you're so inclined to read an academic tome, I would recommend it to you. There will be some accessibility in there. But you can reach me at www.internetdecisions, or you can send an email to info@internetdecisions.com.
Great. Well, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton, and our guest today, Dr. Keith Herndon. We will see you all next time.